Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer, and this is another session of Medical Frontiers, our weekly show to bring about awareness for various medical conditions and so on, sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. And this evening, we're going to be talking about skin cancer diagnosis and treatment, and we want to make you aware that this is Ultraviolet Safety Month. And so we're very fortunate to have as our guest this evening an expert when it comes to skin cancers and soft tissue cancers. And that's none other than Dr. Jonathan Lee. Dr. Lee is a surgical oncologist at Allegheny Health Network. He's the director of surgery at the Allegheny Health Network Cancer Institute, also director of surgical oncology at Allegheny Health Network Surgery Institute. Welcome to Medical Frontiers, Dr. Lee. How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you today?
Hey, doing great. And tell us a little bit about, we hear an awful lot about colon cancer, breast cancer, liver cancer, lung cancer, but that doesn't seem to be a whole lot in the news media and so on, except on rare occasions, about skin cancers. And skin cancers are pretty common, are they not?
Actually, to your point, it is number one cancer diagnosis made in the United States annually. If you add up all the cancer diagnoses combined in the United States, makes about 1.7 million cases. Skin cancer alone, I think, makes up about more than 4 million cases.
Okay, so the skin being the largest organ in the body, there's a lot of opportunity for things to go wrong with our skin, right? It is exposed to our environment. It's easy to get, cuts and abrasions and so on. And what about when you get cancer of the skin? You know, what we talk about mammography and, chest x-rays and CT scans and MRIs and so on. But how's the best way to keep track of what's going on with our skin?
Well, I think if you could go back a little bit, I think the skin is, you're absolutely right in that skin is the largest organ in the human body, and it's not surprising that skin cancer is the most common of all cancers. And skin is truly exposed to the environment, especially one of the most damaging things to the skin in terms of cancer is our exposure to ultraviolet radiation. Okay? Now, as you know, ultraviolet radiation can cause a lot of skin damage, including premature wrinkling, suntan, sunburn, etc. But one of the things that could cause is skin cancer. Good thing is that skin cancer is visible for the most part, so one of the things you could do is take a look at your skin periodically, look for anything new, anything different, or anything changing. In addition to that, obviously, if you have a good primary care physician or a good dermatologist, you could see them on a regular basis for a skin evaluation. And for prevention-wise, one of the best things you could do really is to avoid excessive sun exposure to keep your skin color, your natural skin color, as much as possible.
Okay, and what about using protection, like sunscreen, that type of thing? Is that important, or is it just better to stay out of the sun?
So I would use the best thing you could do is to avoid sun exposure. I think that is probably the best weapon against sun damaged skin. Okay, if you can, obviously you could try to block the sun's damaging rays by using long sleeve clothing with adequate thickness or adequate weave tightness, if you will. And if you can't, I think you always use sunblocks. Okay, so I think I would go in those three order, the avoidance, coverage with long sleeve shirts and pants, and finally sunblock for those areas that's very difficult to cover. So you would have to use a broad spectrum sunblock with giving you protection from both UVA radiation and UVB radiation. The key thing about the using sunblock is that you do have to apply adequate amount of sunblock product on the skin. And you have to reapply every couple of hours and reapply after you get wet or you sweat a lot.
Right. Some people think they can put sunblock on and it'll last all day, no matter how much they're in the swimming pool or in the ocean or the lake or what have you. But whenever you get into the water, you're going to wash off a fair amount of that, depending on how long you're in the water, and it should be reapplied then once you get out of the water, right?
Absolutely. I think two biggest mistakes that I see people make are, number one, they just do not apply enough product, okay? So in order for the SPF, which is a measure of sun protection, to be accurate, you do have to apply enough product to a given area of skin for that SPF to mean anything. Second thing is, yes, a lot of people think that they put high SPF sunblock and they think they're protected for a very long time. Actually, that's not true. Especially, it does, once again, wear off if you just walk around and sweat. And if you get wet, it will wash off and you have to reapply. So those are two main downfalls of using sunblock as your major mechanism of avoiding sun-damaged skin.
Right. Okay, what about the argument, well, we need a certain amount of sunlight to help with the vitamin D levels in our body, and we know we need vitamin D to help with our calcium metabolism and so on. What's your take on that? How much sunlight do we need to maintain good vitamin D levels?
I mean, that is a factually accurate statement in that sunlight can help convert inactive form of vitamin D to an active form of vitamin D. Most experts and the researchers will tell you that you do not need too much sun to do that. And in regards to how much exposure do you need, it really varies substantially, so I cannot give you the exact number. For instance, it would vary depending on the time of the day. It would depend on the season. It would also depend on the latitude in the earth, where you live. It will also depend on how much of your skin is exposed. So it is very difficult to quantify you need X amount, X minutes of sun light exposure a day for it to be adequate. I think the healthiest thing you could do in terms of avoiding sun damage is to obtain vitamin D from your diet and your nutritional supplements. So those can provide you adequate amount of vitamin D without exposing yourself to the sun, to a point where you have a substantial sun-damaged skin and increased risk of skin cancer. That is not to say that all sun exposure is bad. That is absolutely not correct. I think going outside in a good day to enjoy sun is very healthy and good for you. But obviously, what I should tell my patients is try to keep your skin color, your natural skin color, as much as possible.
Okay, we need to take a break in about a minute, but what about tanning booths? Just give us your take on tanning booths.
Well, tanning booths do use artificial UV radiation, okay? And what I could say is that if you go to American Cancer Society website, both the International Agency for Research on Cancer and National Toxicology Program both have concluded that use of UV-emitting tanning services carcinogenic to humans, and exposure to sun lamps or sunbed is also known to be a human carcinogen. Obviously, carcinogens means it can cause cancer.
Yeah. Okay, well, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're fortunate to have Dr. Jonathan Lee with us this evening. He's a surgical oncologist and specializes in skin cancers and soft tissue cancers. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. We'll be back after the break. Hey, we're back on Medical Frontiers. This is Dr. Piper with Dr. Jonathan Lee, a surgical oncologist. We're talking about skin cancers tonight, and this is ultraviolet safety month. So we've had a lot of sunshine over the last 10 days or so. It's really amazing. I told Dr. Lee in the break, it's like being at the beach without water. It's been a very, very humid and sunshiny time. Dr. Lee, we have talked a lot over the last 4 months on Medical Frontiers about COVID-19, the influence it has had on the medical community and so on. How has the pandemic affected your practice, volume-wise? And are you back now seeing patients on a regular basis? Have you used any telehealth, that type of thing? A few words about that.
Right. Ever since the COVID-19, I think the patients coming to see doctors in general across the United States, across all specialties, have decreased substantially. And obviously, my practice in that is not an exception. I'm a surgical oncologist, which means patients who come to my office are sent to me by either a dermatologist or a primary care physician who has noticed a suspicious lesion, biopsied, and turned out to be aggressive forms of skin cancer. And if people do not go to see their primary care physician or their dermatologist as much as they used to, then obviously patients coming into my office will be consequently decreased in numbers, right? But the people who have been diagnosed with cancer, we really haven't changed the way we take care of them. We will still do the operation as necessary. After the operation, if patient needs chemotherapy or radiation, they were still getting them with any significant delay compared to pre-COVID-19 era. Okay? In terms of how we practice medicine, did change substantially in that some practices use telemedicine a lot more than my practice has. And this is where I think there's a little bit of misconception regarding what telemedicine can do for skin cancers. I also been talking to my dermatology colleagues about this, and I think there's some misconception that people could just look at a suspicious lesion on the skin and figure out using the televideo conference technique that this cancer or not. Actually, it doesn't work that way. We would always prefer to see our patients face-to-face and examine the area with our own eyes with optimal lighting and do several maneuvers using special equipment to see or get better understanding of what this lesion is. In that effect, I think we did have to postpone some of the routine follow-ups for a while, but I started seeing patients several weeks ago, and once again, this was in conjunction with hospital and organization guidelines, and in conjunction with the recommendation mandate by the state and local government. And obviously, I had to do my own research on how what the danger of COVID-19, upper respiratory tract infection is, and had to weigh that with danger of not seeing my patients who need to be seen and evaluated for follow-up. And having done risk versus benefit calculation myself, I decided to open up my clinic back to see my patients, once again in accordance with hospital and guidelines and mandate by the local and regional government. And at the same time, when the patients do come to see me, most good chunk of them are actually still very concerned, so I do spend about 5 minutes before the consultation starts explaining to them that in addition to all the recommended guidelines, I did my own personal research to feel personally comfortable seeing you here today.
Good.
So I think patients respond to that very nicely.
Sure. Okay, well, let's go to our phone lines, and George from Carnegie is our first caller. Good evening, George. How are you?
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call. I was pretty rough on my skin as a kid, and then I went into landscaping, and my dermatologist is wonderful, and she's taken several precancers off. She has said that if I visit her every 6 months, that I will never die of skin cancer. Would that be true, Doctor?
What do you think about that, Dr. Lee?
I try to stay away from the phrases like never and always. Having said that, you know, most skin cancers that are diagnosed are something called basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinomas, especially the ones that are driven by sun, okay? And when diagnosed early, these skin cancers are treated and with almost 100% cure rate, okay? So I think in that aspect, I think dermatologists are absolutely right. However, there are other forms of skin cancer, such as melanoma, which even when diagnosed early, can cause problems in the future. One thing about melanoma is that it's one of those cancers that can even come back and cause mortality even 30 years after the initial diagnosis. So if you follow patients for 5 to 10 years and think they're doing fine, well, sometimes it's not like that at all. But I think your dermatologist has a good point to make in that most of the skin cancers are due to sun-damaged skin, and most of the skin cancers, when you find them early, are almost always curable. And I think seeing a dermatologist on a regular basis or your primary care physician on a regular basis or skin surveillance on a regular basis can be a very, very good thing.
Well, that sounds good, and it sounds like George is doing the proper thing. He's going to be checked by his dermatologist every 6 months, and that's one of the best ways to stay in good shape. So thanks so much for the call, George. We appreciate it. We're about ready to take our next break, and you can get in touch with us by calling 866-391-1020. And remember, you can always make an appointment with Allegheny Health Network doctors by calling 412-DOCTORS or online by going to ahn.com. Tonight, we're talking about skin cancers with our guest, Dr. Jonathan Lee, a surgical oncologist from Allegheny Health Network. We'll be back after the break.
The following program is paid for by the Allegheny Health Network.
Okay, we're back for our next segment of Medical Frontiers. We're here with Dr. Jonathan Lee, who is a surgical oncologist. We're talking about skin cancer, and also this is Ultraviolet Safety Month. And we have a caller in the queue, Howard from Shaler. Howard, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'm a liver. I have a liver transplant about 2 years ago. And I'm on rejection drugs, Celsep and Prograf, and I'm told that I have more chance of getting skin cancer taking them drugs. Is that true?
How about that, Dr. Lee? Is he?
Pardon me?
Go ahead. So yeah.
There you go.
Hello. Yes, our understanding these days is that our immune system, as we understand our immune system more and more as the science and medicine advances, we are really having a better appreciation for how immune system really controls cancers, okay? It's not just skin cancer, there are a lot of other different cancers where immune system is intimately involved. Now, obviously, you had a transplant, and you need to take drugs that would impact your immune system so your immune system does not reject your transplanted organ. Unfortunately, one of the side effects of those drugs, because it basically decreases the immune activity, it is not that those drugs will necessarily cause cancer, but it's not the impact of the drug decreasing your immune system can basically let the cancers that are there not in control as it would and if you're, you had an active immune system. That is why if you do have a transplant, it is recommended that you probably go see a dermatologist than those people who do not. And we at Allegheny Health Network really did try to work with our transplant program to streamline the patients with the transplant go seeing a dermatologist for skin surveillance and evaluation of any suspicious skin lesions for possible biopsy and diagnosis. So I think, the point I was trying to make is that I do not know of any literature that says the drugs themselves cause skin cancer, but once again, drugs decrease your immune system, and your immune system has impact on controlling cancer. I hope that clarifies the things.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Howard, for the call. We appreciate it. And keep following up with your physicians and take their advice is the best thing to do. Let's go to JJ in Harmony. Good evening, JJ.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Piper and Dr. Lee. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, I have darkened areas, small areas on my face. I did sunbathe when I was in my teenage years and in my 20s. And I was wondering if there's anything I could do for this and if I should be worried that it could become cancerous in the future.
What's your advice for the JJ, Dr. Lee?
Obviously, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand your concern, by the way. Obviously, I cannot really comment on your particular circumstances regarding what that lesion is and what you can do. However, what I usually tell my, the general public when I give a lot of talks is that, listen, if there is a lesion or a mole that bothers you, guess what?
You always
go see
really
a doctor
a
and say...
They're like, they're just dark areas on my skin, like... I don't know if they call that melasma.
I think I understand what you're talking about. And once again, my advice to recommendation to you is that if it bothers you, feel free to go see your doctor and have it evaluated professionally under appropriate circumstances, okay? That's why we have doctors. It is not that you don't have to go see a doctor only if you have a problem. Sometimes, hey, I have a medical concern, this thing bothers me. Can you take a look at it to see what it is? And your doctor will evaluate the area, and if the biopsy is warranted, they'll do a biopsy. And if it turns out to be something that something such as cancer, then we'll have to take care of it appropriately, okay? But what I would say is that what we're looking for is anything that's changing or growing, okay, or say anything irregular. So those are the things that I think your doctors will look for. And once again, although I understand your concern, it is very difficult for me to give out any medical advice to an individual across the telephone, except that if the lesion on your body bothers you or you look at it and you're concerned about it, share that with your doctor. I think that's a good thing to do.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call, JJ. And as Dr. Lee says, the best thing to do is to have it checked out. If you're concerned about it, have it checked out. Give us a call at 866-391-1020 to have your questions answered by Dr. Lee. Doctor, we've mentioned a couple of times about heredity, genetics, and so on. Do we see skin cancers in families? If your mom and dad had basal cell carcinomas or squamous cell carcinomas or melanoma, is there a greater chance for the progeny to have skin cancers?
Well, that depends on cancer. Obviously, it is very difficult to tell that with basal cell carcinomas or squamous cell carcinomas because they're very, very common. Okay, so you really cannot say, well, you know, is this due to environmental sun damage or is it to genetics? It's just almost impossible to tell that for basal and squamous cell carcinomas. For melanomas, on the other hand, we know that sun exposure and UV damage is not as strongly correlated with developing a melanoma as the UV radiation exposure is correlated with other forms of skin cancers such as basal or squamous cell carcinoma. I have seen in my practice patients with substantial family history of melanoma, and these people tend to have many moles and been diagnosed with a whole bunch of what we call dysplastic nevus, which is funny-looking mole. So yes, there is a genetic component to melanoma, but not for everybody. So when I talk about, what could cause this, I don't really talk about causes. I talk about risk factors, right? One of the risk factors, UV damage to the skin. The other risk factor is family history. So patients who have one melanoma can develop more melanomas, and people with first-degree relative with melanomas tend to have higher likelihood of being diagnosed with melanoma, and there are patient families, history such that their grandmother had it, their mother had it, their sister has it. So, yes, that's a long answer to your question.
Well, that's okay. That explains it very well. How about, Dr. Lee, people who have a lot of moles? I know some people that have hundreds of moles on their body, and most of those are benign, non-malignant, I guess. But, how does somebody, follow if they have lots of moles? And should they be seen, by a dermatologist a couple times a year to make sure that none of those are cancerous? What do you recommend for moly people?
I think you raise a very, very good point, which there is not a really great answer to, okay? Yes, there are people with a lot of moles. And you cannot keep a track of every single mole, on a regular basis because there's too many of them. And even when you send these people, when these people see dermatologists, even some of these people even have, even some of the dermatologists have a hard time keeping track of all these moles. So there are some tools that dermatologists could use. Obviously, there are dermatologists with subspecialty interest in melanoma and skin cancer. I think those are good people to see if you have, you're kind of a moly person, if you will. And some of these dermatologists actually use photography to continue, compare and contrast the changes in moles. And there are something called mole mapping machines that does that automatically as well. So there are advances that are being made in detecting atypical moles and to see if these turn into melanoma. But I think you just raised a very challenging point.
Right. Okay, well, this is Medical Frontiers. Give us a call at 866-391-1020, and you can get on the last segment of Medical Frontiers for this evening. We're talking about skin cancers, 866-391-1020. We'll be back after the break. We're back on Medical Frontiers for our last segment. And we're fortunate to have Dr. Jonathan Lee with us this evening. We're talking about skin cancers. And Dr. Lee is a surgical oncologist with Allegheny Health Network. And why don't we go right to our phone lines. And Ed in Pittsburgh, you're our next caller. Ed, how are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm a
Good.
Dentist.
You have a question.
And I've referred a number of patients to Dr. Lee. I want to say he does beautiful surgery and beautiful diagnostic work, but I wanted to stress the importance of seeing your dentist and having regular oral cancer screenings.
I couldn't agree with that more. I believe that that's an area that sometimes is neglected. We don't, a lot of our population does not have a regular dentist, seeing a dentist every 6 months or every year or whatever. And I'm a big proponent of those types of exams. Dr. Lee, what's your take on oral care?
I would say absolutely ditto. I think good oral hygiene and oral health is very, very important. I think good dental hygiene and good dental health is also very, very important. I think seeing a dentist on a regular basis for good dental oral hygiene and health is an absolutely crucial thing that we could do for ourselves.
Because whether it's in the mouth, whether it's on the skin, or whether it's in your lung or breast, the sooner there is a diagnosis, the better the chance is for a cure or in prevention. You know, if it's a precancerous lesion and it can be removed, it won't turn into cancer. All of those things are important.
The fact of the matter is, you know, the oral cancers, when they get big enough, it becomes very, very difficult to manage. You know, obviously we have good oral surgeons and head and neck surgeons who could take care of that, but, you know, those are very delicate places to develop cancer, and obviously catching that early is a very important thing.
Right. But again, you know, our skin is visible. It's not like our liver or lung or kidney or what have you. And the oral cavity is visible somewhat to us as individuals when we look in a mirror, or you get a lump in your mouth, or you're bleeding in your mouth or whatever. But again, if there's any change in your oral health, contact your dentist and get it checked out. If you have a lump that isn't going away, or you have an ulcer in your mouth that isn't going away, et cetera, et cetera. It's so important, and this is what we've stressed on Medical Frontiers for years. If there's a change in something in your body, it is best to have it checked out. It may not be anything serious. It may be something that is very easy to treat, but it could be something that is serious and needs to be taken care of in a fairly quick way and not put it off.
I would echo that sentiment 100%. I mean, to all those people listening out there, listen, you know your body the best, okay? So if there's something about your body that concerns you, some changes that are concerning, worrying you, go talk to your doctor. Have your doctor look at it and check it out.
And we talked before about skin lesions. You have something on your skin that has been changing. It's getting larger. It's itchy. It is bleeding. It is scabbing over whatever, not healing, or getting in a larger circumference, et cetera. Those are the types of things that are warnings, and that's when you need to be concerned and get it checked out. See your PCP, and if they think it's necessary to see a dermatologist or a surgical oncologist like Dr. Lee, they'll make the appropriate referral. It is not good to put it off. Right, Dr. Lee?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. I cannot say any better than you just did.
So we've stressed that over the years that we have been doing Medical Frontiers, and here's an expert. He sees folks at the other end. They've been diagnosed, or they're close to making a diagnosis, and he sees the end result of this. And the longer people put it off, then the worse it can be from the standpoint of treatment. If it's at the early stage, the cure rate can be very, very high. If it is at the end stage, then not only is the cure rate less, but it's also a lot more painful and more difficult to go through that. It's like a melanoma. If it's gotten at a very early stage, the cure rate can be very high. But if it's stage four and has spread to various parts of your body, then the cure rate is not as good, right, Dr. Lee?
Yes, that's absolutely correct, too. Obviously, that's why we stage people. Staging is used. Most cancers are measured in four different stages, of stage 1, 2, 3, and 4. Stage 1 being early form of cancer, therefore the best outcome. Stage 4 being the most advanced form of cancer, and therefore the worst outcome. Stage 1 is typically characterized by smaller lesion that is confined to where it started from. Stage 4 is characterized by cancer spreading to many different organs. Obviously, when a cancer is small and confined to where it started from, it's a lot easier to remove it surgically. You're going to get smaller scars, smaller operation. You will typically not need any chemotherapy or radiation therapy. On the other hand,
okay, Dr. Lee, we're right up to our end time. Thank you so much for being our guest tonight. And we will be back with Medical Frontiers next week. Good night.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.